Thank you, Bonnie. Welcome, everyone. I'm Marilyn Stern, a Forum board member serving as chair. Today we welcome Stephen J. Rosen, former Foreign Policy Director of AIPAC, the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee, and current Director of the Middle East Forum's Washington Project. Mr. Rosen will offer his analysis of the new Israeli government under Prime Minister Netanyahu. The fourth term under Netanyahu finds a right-wing government off to a shaky start with a razor-thin majority. With mounting international pressure following the recent critical UNHRC report, the prospect of another Gaza flotilla, and strained relations between Washington and Jerusalem that Ambassador Oren has been publicizing, Netanyahu has to bolt out of the starting gate. Hanging over all of this is the June 30th deadline for the Iran agreement. The tasks at hand for Netanyahu seem overwhelming with such an unstable coalition. Stephen Rosen will offer his comments about these issues. Stephen?
Thank you, Marilyn, and thank you all for being here. A great deal has been written about the stability of Netanyahu's government. On the face of it, it looks very unstable. It's only 61 in a Knesset of 120, and Israeli parliamentarians are famous for their fractious behavior and their very individualistic approach. So it might look like a single defection could come from anywhere and the government would fall. That's an interesting question. Is it really as unstable as it looks? Israel has had similarly narrow governments several times in the past, and many of them lasted for quite a while. Famously, Yitzhak Rabin signed the highly controversial Oslo II agreement in 1995 with an unstable 61-member government that was less stable than this one, and he got away with it. Menachem Begin invaded Lebanon in 1982, the first Lebanon War, with the same majority. Governments don't automatically fall just because they're narrow. Somebody has to decide to either defect to the other side or bring the government down for the sake of some issue of principle. And when you start looking at the composition of this government, it's hard to find people who would have that motivation. The parties that compose this government are united in opposition to the left, and their members are very unlikely to defect ideologically to the other half of the Israeli political spectrum. Doesn't seem likely at all. So the main threat to this government is not from the outside, something the left can do to bring it about. The main threat to this government is something from the inside. And when we start looking in a little more detail at what the threat from the inside could be, the first threat will be trying to pass a budget by November 5th, the deadline. Under Israeli law, if you fail to pass a budget by the deadline, the government automatically falls. This is not true in many other democracies, but in the particular case of Israel, this budget law is a pretty rigid one and has brought down more governments than any other single cause. And there will be difficulty in coming to an agreement on a budget. There are differences in view between the principal parties. The budget will be written largely by the finance minister, Mr. Kahlon, Moshe Kahlon, who heads the second largest party in the coalition. He doesn't love the prime minister, but the main issue is going to be that he's an advocate of dramatic economic reforms, particularly in the housing and banking sectors, to strengthen the middle class. And he may have actually the support of the prime minister, but he may not necessarily have the support of the other parties. Some of the other parties are focused on other priorities. Shas and United Torah Judaism, the two ultra-Orthodox parties, are focused on family allowances and yeshivas and their authority over religious matters. And they may drive a very hard bargain. They were out of power for several years, and they are hungry, and their constituents are hungry, and they want a lot. The party of the right, known as Israel Home, headed by Naftali Bennett, is very focused on the settlements and Israel's claim to the lands of the Bible in Judea and Samaria. And he, among other things, wants money for the settlements. So it's easy enough to appropriate funds for all these competing needs, but the limitation is the deficit. And the Prime Minister in particular is committed to limiting the deficit as part of the economic reform that's created the prosperity that Israel's been enjoying. If the deficit were to go up, Israel's credit rating could collapse, its interest rates would go up, and it would be self-defeating. There would be an instant economic crisis. Its ability to borrow would be injured. So the Prime Minister is not, and Mr. Kahlon, are not likely to allow the deficit to increase. That means that every time you increase spending to meet one of these demands, you have to cut something else. So the Prime Minister is very interested in natural gas, you know, these discoveries in the Eastern Mediterranean. That has been held up by some dispute over the rate of return that the exploration companies should get. And a populist official in the previous government struck down a contract that was already signed with Dalek and Noble Energy, saying that they were getting too large a share of the proceeds. That has brought it to a screeching halt. The Prime Minister desperately wants the gas to flow and is likely to return to the original signed contracts, which most outside observers believe are legally binding anyway and should be honored. So this is going to be quite a controversy, but it's probably not the main thing most people on this call are interested in, but it's likely to be a very important thing in Israel to find new revenue to meet these competing demands without busting the budget and raising the deficit and thereby harming Israel's credit rating. So that's where a lot of the action is right now. It doesn't interest the outside world a huge amount, but it's going to consume the new government of Israel for months to come. In terms of issues that interest the outside world, the settlement issue is likely to be a very big one. The party of the right, Naftali Bennett's Jewish home, Bayit Yehudi party, has gained control over several powerful government ministries to push forward an agenda for settlement construction and things that are related to it. Bayit Yehudi, or Bennett's party, is the only party that opposes a Palestinian state outright, not just as because on the grounds that there's no partner or some temporary security argument, but more deeply because the land of Israel, in their view, belongs to the people of Israel, and there should not be another entity west of the Jordan River. So theirs is a pretty sweeping worldview. They have control of the settlement division of the World Zionist Organization, which transfers money to settlements. They have control of the deputy defense minister position, which controls what's called the civil administration in the territories, that controls the West Bank's economy. And they have control of the agricultural ministry through a particularly hardline minister from Israel Home Party called Uri Ariel, who's one of the most ardent proponents of stepped-up settlement activity. They have two seats in the security cabinet. So they're in a powerful position. But they face the Prime Minister, who on this issue is comparatively more moderate, does not want uncontrolled expenditures, especially outside what are called the settlement blocks and Jerusalem. He wants to restrict construction activity primarily to Jerusalem and the settlement blocks, areas that he argues would be part of Israel in any future agreement with the Palestinians anyway, as Arafat conceded back at Camp David in the year 2000. He does not want construction in the outlying settlements deep in the West Bank interior. Whereas Bennett's party is particularly interested in construction in the interior because of the principle of redemption of the land and the legitimacy of Israel's claim to the land. So this is an issue of very high principle for people of the right, including some inside the Likud itself, and could bring the government down in some scenarios. We are not near that yet, but it is something to be watched, whether there will be an internal compromise over where settlement construction, housing construction for settlements can take place and where it cannot, and the outside world has a huge interest in that subject. There are other divisive issues. There is the issue of conscription, and the question of the sharing of the burden with the ultra-Orthodox, and whether they should have an obligation for military service or national service in place of military service. There are issues of conversion to Judaism. There are issues of the rabbinate, so what you might call the social basket of issues. And there are some other security issues besides settlements which are divisive, such as policy toward Hamas. And I don't think that in this government policy toward Iran is going to be so divisive. The Prime Minister's control over what's called the political security cabinet is greater in this new government than it was in the previous one. And there were some articles written arguing that he might not have had the votes for a military strike on Iran should he choose to engage in one in the past government. I doubt that anybody would make that argument about the present government. I think that his ability to win such a vote, should he choose to try to win such a vote, has gone up. So Iran is probably not such a divisive issue internally. In dealing with the outside world, the Prime Minister faces a huge challenge. In the past, his own image wasn't quite as bleak as it is lately. And he has been demonified, I needn't tell you, in America and in, among Democrats particularly, and I would say in Europe. His own credibility has been damaged. Partly by the statement he made during the campaign that a Palestinian state won't happen during his watch. He was making a factual observation that the conditions for it don't exist. It was interpreted to mean he didn't want one, even though he had said that he's in favor of a two-state solution. So he has a problem in reestablishing his personal credibility. But an even bigger problem is the people he sends out in his behalf. In his past governments, he had a kind of soft window. He had Ehud Barak as his defense minister, and Barak was the man who went to Camp David and tried to compromise with Arafat, and then became the defense minister for Netanyahu. So that gave him a degree of credibility in Europe and America. And then later, when Barak was gone, he had Tzipi Livni as his chief peace negotiator. And she is an ardent proponent of a two-state solution. And so she had a credibility with liberal voices in other countries. And to some degree, he had Yair Lapid, who was a member of his government. So he had, you know, kind of a soft window. In the new government, he doesn't have that. There's no major personality known, well-known outside Israel. Dan Meridor is out of government. And Zalman Shoval and some of the Likud members who have a personal credibility in the Western world are not there anymore. So his party looks hard aligned, the government looks hard aligned, he looks hard aligned. And I'm not telling you anything you don't know, but he faces a challenge, particularly in dealing with Barack Obama here in Washington, who still has a year and a half to go, and maybe even beyond that, depending on the nature of the next U.S. administration, and also to some degree in Europe, where his relations are mixed with some of the European governments. So the sky is not falling, but he faces challenges, but my own assessment, bottom line, I would not jump to the conclusion that this government is going to be gone in a few months. That's not necessarily the case at all, and it could last for quite a while. If it were to be changed, my own belief is that the most likely change would, even though it doesn't seem very likely right now, is if the Prime Minister and Mr. Cajon, working together, decided to bring in Israel's Labor Party, which has now been renamed Israel. I'm having a senior moment. Forget its new name. That would require a willingness on the part of Mr. Herzog and possibly Ms. Livni to come into a government, something that at the present time they're not willing to do, and it would require an invitation from Netanyahu and Cologne and a determination to go up against some of their colleagues that at present doesn't exist. But I think if there were to be a change, that's the most likely change, and Netanyahu would still be prime minister. So, Marilyn, I think that's probably enough for an intro. I've said a lot of controversial things, and perhaps we should have an open discussion.
Great. Bonnie, could you please give the participants their call-in instructions?
Yes, thank you. The question and answer period will now begin, and we invite your participation. Please note that when there are no questions in the queue, the moderator will ask a question. To join the question and answer session queue, press star 1 on your telephone keypad. If you wish to identify yourself when your line has been unmuted, please do so. Please remember, if you have your phone on mute, take it off mute when you are selected to ask your question. Again, to join the question and answer session queue, press star 1 on your telephone keypad. Okay, we'll take our first question now. Caller, if you wish to identify yourself, please do so when you hear that your line is unmuted. Go ahead with your question, please.
Bill Seltzer, I just wonder if the defense budget is in any way restricted or altered because the rest of the world is not going to sit by quietly during Netanyahu's new term, and whether the allies that Israel once had to depend on are still there. Quite aside from the other matters.
Yeah, thank you, Dove. Well, I think that certainly this government is committed to a robust defense. On the other hand, as I argued, I think that the government is going to be looking for resources to meet some unmet social needs. The unhappiness of the public was very apparent in the last couple of years in Israel, including during the election campaign. And I think there's a determination on the part of the prime minister and the finance minister, but probably the whole government, to try to address housing and other unmet needs of a broad swath of the public and income inequality. In the course of doing that, it's hard to accomplish that while paying for everything in the defense sphere, unless you want to have budget busting and a giant deficit. So I think that there, even though this is a right-wing government, I think there are going to be constraints on the defense budget that will be very unwelcome from the security point of view, but probably are going to occur. Exactly what those areas will be, I don't have the expertise, but that there will be limits on the defense budget. It's, and now, as far as whether Israel's allies will be there, I think that there has been one area in which the Obama administration has a good record is in support for Israel's national security needs in the area of armaments and defense spending. And the government of Israel is coming to the Obama administration with a proposal for an increase in military assistance. There was an increase last year. They want a further increase over and above that. The Congress is sympathetic, but is held back also by American budgetary considerations. But I think that we're going to see some further improvement in American economic support for Israel. And I might add that the government of Germany has been pretty good, too. At the moment, the German government is subsidizing some missile boats that are important to Mediterranean security, to the tune of hundreds of millions of euros that are being provided as a subsidy by the German government. So it's not just the United States government. But with all that, there'll still be a shortfall. So that's the best I can say.
Thank you.
Okay, we'll go to our next question. Caller, if you wish to identify yourself, please do so when you hear your line is unmuted.
I guess I'm up. This is Rafi Marom. I have a question on domestic policy. In the Hebrew press, there was a lot reported about the increase in taxes for acquiring a second apartment, releasing of land for building, zero VAT tax on the purchase of an apartment for first-time buyers. Are any of these plans right now before any of the committees of the Knesset, and what appears to be the future of any such reforms?
Rafi, I don't think that most of that has moved very far yet. The government is still, if not brand new, just a few weeks old, and I think they're working it out. The Prime Minister and the Finance Minister in particular are deep in negotiations about the exact things you just described. That's why they're in the press. But to my knowledge, most of it is still to come. My own belief is that we will see a package, and there'll be a debate about whether it's an adequate package. But I could be mistaken here. I'm not an expert in housing, but I believe that there's going to be movement in this area. New things are going to happen. It's whether they're sufficient for the scale of the problem that people are going to question.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, we'll go to our next caller. Please go ahead with your question and identify yourself if you wish to do so when you hear your line is unmuted.
Johanna Markhind, thank you for your presentation. I wondered whether you had any thoughts to offer, any speculation about how conflict between the, well, ultra-Orthodox and less ultra-Orthodox, or really everybody else, might play out in the immediate future, and what, if any, impact that may have on the coalition.
Yeah, Ms. Markhind, I'm sorry I didn't get your first name. I think that with Lapid out of the government and with Lieberman out of the government, it was really the Russians and the secular party that Lapid heads, Yesh Atid, that were most forceful in on this question on the other side. And with Shas and UTJ coming into the government, that the balance is going to shift. But I think the goal of the Prime Minister is to prevent it from swinging too far the other direction, to the point that he alienates the major part of the public, which is asking for some revision of the sharing of the burden of national security and taxation and the like. So, but this is another subject on which the new government has not had its last word yet. We're at the beginning, not the end. That there's going to be a shift is inevitable. I think, for example, criminal prosecution for resistance to conscription on the part of ultra-Orthodox individuals who are considered Torah scholars is probably not going to be curtailed. But whether there'll be some sort of penalty in the form of appropriations to yeshivas that as a kind of incentive, that issue is, I think, not fully resolved yet. So, again, the devil's in the details with all these things, and we don't have the details because it's too soon. But there'll be a shift because there's been a shift in power. There's been a shift. By the way, I want to apologize for forgetting the name of the Zionist Union, which, of course, is the party of Herzog and Lebedev. And had there been a government headed by the Zionist Union, it would have brought in a different coalition with a different result. But given that the election came out the other way, I think we can predict pretty confidently some kind of rebalancing.
Thank you very much.
Okay, and we'll take our next question. Caller, if you wish to identify yourself, please do so when you hear your line is unmuted.
This is Kenneth Bialkin of the America-Israel Friendship League, Steve. I wonder if you would comment on the latest controversy that's all over the newspapers, started by Michael Oren's book, Ally, in which he says that the U.S. government has said openly, both privately and publicly now, that U.S. and Israel relationships will be adversely affected if Israel does not show greater support and compliance with the demands of the Palestinians for a Palestinian state. Is this controversy, which has brought a firestorm of criticism against Michael Oren, of any consequence, or is it just an opening up and putting some fresh air into a dispute which has been and remains a major issue between the countries?
Well, thanks, Ken. You've been a very long and close observer of all this, and I'm sure you know the subject at least as well as I do. There's a fresh poll data that came out only today also from the Pew Charitable Trust, which is a very credible polling organization, and they found that the Israeli public's faith in Obama has gone down dramatically in just 1 year. It had started out low, and it had grown somewhat after Obama visited Israel, but apparently it has eroded all over again. So what we're looking at is not just one man, an important man, our friend Michael Oren, but really the mainstream in Israel is questioning the depth of commitment. The president, if he was on this call, would say, I didn't exactly say that my support for Israel would go down. What I said was my ability to defend Israel in international forums would go down because I need something to work with. And when the prime minister said that Palestinian state won't happen, it sounded like he was repudiating the two-state solution. So this is what Obama would say in his own behalf. But Oren was there. I had the privilege to be there when he was there at times. And he's not a man of the far right at all. He is really a centrist. He has joined the centrist party in Israel, the party of Kahon. And the fact that someone of his stature and intelligence has been so forthright, I think, adds weight. Only today, Bill Clinton's Secretary of Defense, Bill Cullen, spoke out on the Iran agreement. Perhaps a lot of you haven't seen this yet. He said very forcefully that this agreement will increase proliferation in the Middle East, not reduce it. It's going to lead the Saudis and others to move toward nuclear weapons. And he was very harsh in his criticism of the agreement and of the general credibility of Obama's policy in the Middle East. That was a Democratic defense secretary. Actually, Obama's own defense secretary, Bob Gates, made pretty harsh statements about his Middle East policy as well. So you don't have to be Michael Oren to raise doubts about it. And they're trying to respond to Oren in ad hominem attacks all over the place. But in my opinion, Oren is going to have the support of more people than he had before. And he's voicing concerns that are held by many, certainly by me.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ken.
Steve, we're close to 4:30. We have one more caller in the queue. Do you have time?
Please.
Okay. Go ahead, Bonnie.
Okay. So, caller, you may introduce yourself if you wish once you hear your line has been unmuted.
Yes, this is Jerry Stern. You mentioned Avigdor Lieberman earlier in your conversation, in your presentation, rather. There was an article last week in the papers in which Lieberman had put feelers out to that he would consider joining the coalition if Netanyahu would proceed with the construction of 1,000 or so units at Maale Adumim, which is in the territories. So the question I have is, if Lieberman were to be, and his party were to be taken into the government, how would this affect the calculus of the coalition? And do you think that the personal animus between himself and Bibi might get in the way of the party making any kind of material contribution?
Well, that's a very astute question, Jerry, if I may say, because people are not watching Lieberman as much as they should. Lieberman is already likely to support the government from the outside on many issues. He's not going to join the left. He will vote with the government on a host of issues that are likely to come up, which gives the government a solid 67 to 53 majority rather than 61-59. So we shouldn't assume that Lieberman is in the same place that the Zionist Union is, Herzog and Lemny. And as you say, Lieberman might actually join the government in coming months, giving Netanyahu a much easier majority. Many people were surprised that Lieberman spurned the opportunity just a few weeks back and expected him to join the government in the first place. So I wouldn't rule it out. A problem area is the sharing of the burden with the religious and the power of religious courts over matters of conversion, marriage, and many other things. Lieberman's constituency, Russians, feel that they are victims of the decisions made by ultra-Orthodox ministers, and there's a certain ideological competitiveness there. So bringing Lieberman into the government is likely to be problematic in that social issues basket. But I wouldn't rule it out at all. I think that there's a better chance of Lieberman coming into this government than of this government falling. And it's not an either-or. The government won't necessarily fall even if he doesn't come in, as I argued all along. So I think this government has, going back to our starting point, Marilyn, I think this government is more secure than it looks. It's not impossible for it to fall, but it's not going to be something that's going to happen right away.
Thank you, Steve. That was a very comprehensive briefing. The Middle East Forum thanks Stephen Rosen for his briefing today and to our participants for calling in. And this concludes our conference call.